This is a production of Cornell University.
Good afternoon. I thank you for coming, and welcome to the 2008 Presidential Address. Off to my left, we have on stage Vice President of Human Resources, Mary George Opperman. She is joined by President David Skorden and our employee elected trustee, Beth McKinney. The Employee Assembly, supported by the Division of Human Resources and the Office of Assemblies, are proud to present this year's President's Address. This will be President David Skorden's third address to staff since he became our 12th president of Cornell University, and he has done a remarkable job in leading the Cornell community through the challenges of the 21st century. Due to the energy crisis and the worldwide economic problems, we, the Employee Assembly, have done our best to bring energy-saving tips, best practices, and cost-saving products here to Cornell for your benefit. I don't know how much time you were here visiting with our vendors, but behind the stage you saw a small trailer, a little unit, equipped with solar power panels. And it's not a satellite returning from the Mars mission, but rather, it's a solar stage. The solar stage uses solar energy to power some of the loudspeakers we're using for today's event, and is one more way that we can work together to reduce our carbon footprint. Cornell is committed to reducing our carbon footprint in the years ahead, and it is one of the topics that President Skorden will be speaking about today. And to move us closer to hearing about carbon footprints and other important issues and topics, I'll introduce our next speaker of the day. Our next speaker has been our university's HR leader and our champion for the last 11 years. She has acted as a true supporter for all of our employees by devoting her career and making Cornell a better place to work. She exemplifies the meaning of leadership, and her support has been seen time and time again. She's been very active with the Employee Assembly, and we owe her many thanks for the assistance that she has provided us. It is with great pleasure that I give you our Vice President of Human Resources, Mary George Opperman.
Thank you, Brian, and thank you all of you for coming here today. I'd like to thank the Employee Assembly for putting on today's Energy Fair. Can we all give them a round of applause? I hope you found some useful tips out there in the Energy Fair. I want to speak just very briefly today to you from the heart about a time in all of our lives that's very difficult and kind of scary, and then turn this over to President Skorden. I think he and I want to give you a lot of time to ask us questions today, so I'm not going to do a lot of talking. I don't know about you, but I'm just going to take this away so he doesn't tease me about it. I turned 50 this year. Thank you. If I don't say it, what he says is I'm in my sixth decade. And that's much harder to hear. But I haven't faced, in my professional life, a time like this before. The financial situation is complicated and one that I'm not quite sure I completely understand. I've taken to the habit of not opening my retirement statements. I find that to be quite liberating, actually. We have done a lot since I've been here to work hard to become a better employer. We strive to be, and in some cases I think we are getting close to being an employer of choice. There's a reason for that, and it's not about us, it's about all of you. The people who work at Cornell, the staff of Cornell, are the heartbeat of the university. You clean the buildings, you crunch the numbers, you support the academic enterprise, you nurture our students, you safeguard our campus, you help make exciting research discoveries, you keep an eye on the infrastructure of the university, And through your efforts, this institution becomes greater and greater every year. And so while we find ourselves in a challenging time, I am in a leadership position with leaders who are second to none. And I'm proud of the fact that we are all unified in our commitment that we will move forward through this time, come out at the end of it better than we are right now, and we will remain a better employer, an employer of choice, and we will do things that we are proud of. I look forward to working with our brand new provost, Kent Fox. For those of you who don't know him, he is a fantastic leader of the College of Engineering and will make a wonderful provost. But mostly, I am pleased, proud, and very comforted that we will take the next few years together with really, truly the best leader that Cornell could have, President David J. Scorton.
Thank you. Thanks, Mary. And I do want to comment to follow up Brian's remark. We're lucky to have Mary in a leadership position. Mary's a genuine article. Thank you for all you do, Mary. And I also want to have a chance to thank Brian, not just because we're up here on stage, but because particularly at a time when we're facing financial challenges and organizational challenges, it's more important than ever that the employees and the faculty, faculty and non-faculty employees and the students have their shared governance voice. And Brian's very effective, and we'll look forward to staying in even closer touch as we will with Beth and the Board of Trustees. So it's important that we're all talking to each other, and you have wonderful representatives in these two people, and I want to thank both of them. So I know that this year the economic situation in this community, both on campus and off, in the state and the nation and the world, and very importantly in the university itself, is very much on everyone's mind. It's on my mind. And after making some remarks about the energy and sustainability, which I understand the EA would like me to speak about, I want to focus on the financial situation and, as Mary and Brian said, leave as much time for us to mix it up honestly as we can today. I want to start, though, by giving you a bit of good news, something I'm very happy to announce today. As you know, Cornell typically closes for the winter break between Christmas and New Year's Day, and this practice, I understand, was instituted about 30 years ago as a way to cut energy costs and of course, give our colleagues a chance to have a more enjoyable holiday season. This year, the winter break includes 6 days off, beginning Thursday, December 25, and including Thursday, January 1. And I'm very pleased to announce today that after consulting with the deans and with Mary and others around the campus, including the senior staff, that we're adding an extra day to this year's winter break so that all staff members who work a standard work week will also have January 2, that Friday, as an extra day off. So we'll have a 7-day winter break. Thank you. Thank you. So let's begin to talk a little bit about the financial situation. And in difficult times, there's a great temptation for all organizations that are human capital intensive, where most of the budget is in people, there's a great temptation to balance that budget on the backs of employees. And retaining excellent faculty members and providing startup packages for faculty and support for faculty who need to do their very best is critically important, or we wouldn't have the jobs that we have, not you and not me. And so we're going to remain completely committed to aggressively continuing to recruit and retain and support faculty. Nonetheless, here, as in every research university of which I'm aware, the majority of employees are not in the faculty ranks. And I believe that universities like Cornell have to lead the way to be sensitive and caring employers, not even at a time of financial distress, but especially at a time of financial distress. And as you may know, I think most of you do know, Cornell in the last decade or so has been recognized in many ways, in many venues as a progressive employer. Lynette Chappell Williams and Mary and I and others from Cornell were in Chicago a couple weeks ago to accept Cornell's recognition from AARP as the number one employer in the United States for employees over the age of 50. And I was very, very proud of that. And we've been in that honor roll for 3 or 4 years. I forget exactly how many. But to be named number one in the country out of a list of 50, which to my knowledge, I think 45 of those 50 were not universities. And we were one of five anyway to get in there. And then number one was tremendous. We also officially, as I hope you know, dedicated a new child care center near the North Campus. And it's a wonderful facility that will help many Cornell families balance work and family commitments, which is critically important. And you know we've received many other recognitions as a top employer from Working Mother and other venues. In terms of in times of a challenge, financial challenge like we're in now, committing ourselves to continue and even advance progressive workplace practices becomes even more important. It's not only important and not primarily important that I say that in public speeches, but that I do the right thing behind the scenes in making decisions. But it's also important to talk about it in public speeches because all of our morale as colleagues, and every one of you and I are colleagues on this campus, it's very important that I lead and represent you with calmness and with foresight and with honesty, and that we face this together, which we're going to do, not just to get by, but to retain our status, approaching, as Mary said, becoming and remaining an employer of choice, and we're going to do that. I'm going to get back to that in just a few minutes. I want to answer some of the questions that Brian asked me to touch on in terms of energy and sustainability. As you know, this energy fair will continue for a couple more hours today, and it's a terrific example of the many different ways that Cornell is attempting to educate and assist each other so that we can meet basic needs of the community, including the need to feel good about our workplace. Oil prices, as you know, have dropped very, very precipitously in recent weeks from the scary record highs of just 3 months ago, but still the cost of energy puts a burden on many families and individuals, especially as we go into the winter season in this climate. And it's related not only to getting by, but it's related to all of us feeling good about sustainability and about how we manage our campus together. So I hope you'll take a chance, a few minutes in your busy schedules, to learn about the things that Cornell is doing and to visit some of these wild and interesting displays like the 100 mile per gallon vehicle being developed by students here as part of the $10 million Progressive Automotive X Prize, AXP Prize, in 2010. The Energy Bike, which is designed to power household appliances, and at the opening day of the state fair, a couple of us got on that thing, and you don't want to depend on me to keep the lights on in the university, but it's a fascinating thing, and if you want to try your legs on that, that would be interesting to find out. And then along with the Ithaca Car Share and carpooling displays and other areas and organizations that are participating in the energy fair, I think you'll get a lot out of spending a few minutes at those displays. As many of you know, and as some of you advised me on and guided me on, in February of 07, on our behalf, on your behalf, I signed the American College and Universities President's Climate Commitment. I committed Cornell to achieving climate neutrality, and I don't know, even today, how we're going to do that. That means we have to be a part of developing the technologies and the approaches that will allow us to reach climate neutrality, even at a time where we are growing and we will continue to grow in the future. But I thought and think, once again, based on your good advice and others, that it's very important for us to lead in this fashion as well and to put ourselves out there and take the risk of saying, even though we don't know all the ways we're going to do this, we are going to strive and to succeed in becoming climate neutral. Now, you know about the efforts that preceded this signing for years. For example, the Lake Source Cooling Project, very aggressive transportation mitigation projects, laboratory energy efficiency, electrical purchases that we've made in a careful way that have allowed the university, believe it or not, to achieve a net zero increase, not to increase the carbon footprint. In fact, we have already begun to reduce our emissions, even though the campus has grown about 15% since 1990. This year, as part of the President's Climate Commitment, and also because we thought it was the right thing to do, we did and published, and many of you may have read of, an actual inventory of what our carbon footprint is. These are terms that are not very familiar to me, but I'm learning about them, as many of you may be. We currently emit approximately 319,000 metric tons of carbon dioxide per year. This is how much we actually turn out. This doesn't count offsets, for example, the oxygen produced by 14,000 acres of Cornell-owned forests. It may be interesting for you to know, as I recently learned, that those forests absorb about 40% of the carbon created by all of us in commuting back and forth to work. When the combined heat and power project goes online in about 18 months, the university's greenhouse gas emissions will drop 30% below the 1990 levels and well beyond the goal that we set ourselves to be 7% below that goal set in 2001. Q Wong, VP for Facility Services, and Professor Tim Fahey of Natural Resources co-chair an organization called the President's Climate Commitment Implementation Committee, PCCIC, which includes staff and students and faculty, and I thank all of them for their efforts. This year, with a $425,000 matching grant from NYSERDA, we are preparing a climate action plan that is due to be completed about a year from now, in September of 2009. Last Wednesday, as I know many of you know, was Campus Sustainability Day, which included a climate action plan idea exchange, which I understand has already been very helpful in bringing some new ideas to the table. On the academic side of the university, that side that's going to have to not only teach tomorrow's students and today's students about ways of moving forward, but is going to have to develop those technologies that we don't have yet that will allow us all to do better. Cornell Center for Sustainable Future canvassed the faculty, and out of the 1,700 or so faculty, fully 300 self-identified either their teaching or their research as having something to do with sustainability. So there's a very strong cadre of faculty throughout many, many disciplines on the Ithaca campus who are interested and active in sustainability. So now I want to get back to the economy, which of course is very high on all of our lists and the top thing in my mind right now as your colleague. The economic crisis has baffling a lot of us to understand. Mary and many others have said in public in recent days and weeks that it's sort of hard to understand. And as a non-economist, I've been trying to learn more from many of the economics faculty on campus about how we got here and what the country and what the world can do going forward. But when it comes right down to it, what I need to focus on every day and every waking hour, really and truly, is to focus on this university and how we can be good stewards of the resources and good stewards of the people to work our way through a difficult time. Just to quote you some of the statistics that keep me up at night, and maybe you as well, 159,000 jobs were lost nationwide in September last month. This is the ninth straight month of job decline. Just a few days ago, we learned, for example, that Yahoo, not an old-time manufacturing discipline, but a sort of a modern information-based discipline, is planning to cut 10% of its workforce. Merck and company, a large pharmaceutical company that develops and does research for pharmaceuticals and then manufactures and markets them, said it's going to cut another 7,200 jobs, or more than 12% of its workforce, and that's their second restructuring in 3 years. In other words, even before the immediate market crisis hit. And I know that all of you have been reading the headlines, even today, about the auto manufacturers talking about mergers and even talking about possible bankruptcy. The housing market is struggling with foreclosures and the lack of available credit to fuel new purchases. And of course, here in New York State, we're bracing ourselves for budget cuts and perhaps more budget cuts, because 20 cents on the dollar of revenue to our state comes from Wall Street and the financial industry. So when we were together last week, when the University Council and the trustees were on campus, with the help of my senior staff colleagues and others, I developed an address for the state of the university that tried to deal with these issues. I don't want to repeat a lot of things there. I hope that some of you will have the opportunity to go on the website and read aspects of that speech so that you can have at your leisure a chance to think about it. But I want to just cover a couple of the highlights again. Number one, I want to tell you, and I need to say this everywhere that I go, and hope that you'll believe me, that we are not in a severe financial crisis on this campus. We are not. I'm going to go over why that is in a moment. But secondly, the environment is changing, and it's changing rapidly and dramatically. And so we have to change as well, and I have to lead, and we all together have to manage the university in new ways that will allow us to not only come through a difficult time, but come through a difficult time being an employer of choice and being even a better university than Cornell is now. And you may wonder, how can we become a better university than Cornell is now when we're facing financial exigencies? And that is because the rich variety of revenue streams that we have, the extraordinary loyalty of Cornell alumni and friends, and you, the talent and dedication of the employees of the university, as long as we don't lose those three things, and we will not lose them, we're going to come out with new ideas, and you will raise many of those ideas that will allow us to go forward and do things in a better way. In a funny way, when we face a financial exigency like this, and I have faced many of them, being in a state-supported institution for many years, for a quarter of a century before coming here, it's a liberating chance to rethink how we do things and go forward in a way that's more efficient and in a way that will actually allow us to increase, not only maintain, but increase quality. And because of you and because of the quality of employees and students at this university, I know that we're going to get there. Most of our budget at this university is employees, as I mentioned, 60%, and in some universities as high as 75%. That means, of course, that some of the actions that will be taken will affect employees. Many of you know that there have already been some layoffs at the university related in part to state budget cuts. And I have no doubts that as things go forward, more personnel actions will have to occur. But by managing this enterprise as a single institution, not as 14 different colleges and many other units, but as a single institution, I and we will look creatively and aggressively for opportunities to function more effectively, more efficiently, and that means that some changes will occur across the entire university, reaching all the way to New York City. We face very difficult choices together, and I'm not going to sugarcoat that, and I'm going to be open with you and do my best to get a message out to the campus about every month about how we're doing. I had a letter to you about a month ago. We had the State of the University address, and I'll have something out to you again before Thanksgiving, letting you know in increasing detail, as we develop that detail, how we're going to go forward. The main message I want to leave with you, though, is that we are not going to retreat from our commitment to being an employer of choice and to involving ourselves deeply in the human capital of the university, because it's the human capital that makes us what we are in every way, in quality and in loyalty to each other. It's the human capital. We will stand strongly behind that. So those are the comments that I made in response to Brian's suggestions of what to talk about, and I'm really glad to take any questions that I can answer for you, and I'm sure that Brian and Mary and Beth will be able to answer some of those questions better than I can. But please, let's take a few minutes and discuss things together. We have, anyway, 15, 20 minutes, I guess. Is that right? Oh, yeah, sorry. There is a microphone down there, and if you're somewhere else and you just want to yell it out, and I can repeat the question, but I think we have a good 15, 20 minutes that we can talk. So I think Brian's going to moderate, or I can moderate myself, whatever you're comfy with, but let's just have questions, comments about anything you'd like to talk about. Please, thank you.
We do welcome questions, and if you do have a question, you can, if you feel comfortable shouting out from where you are sitting, that's acceptable. Or you're welcome, our Vice Chair of the Employee Assembly, Jason Seymour, is standing there with a wired mic if you feel more comfortable going up there to see him. We ask that your questions be related to energy-related topics, the economic crisis, and the future of Cornell, and we'll start the questions.
Thank you for the extra holiday.
Yeah, you're welcome. You're welcome. I was very supportive, and you can just imagine where that idea first came from. So I was very supportive of the idea, as we all are. It's a really important thing. Please. Yeah, please come on over to the microphone. That would be great.
I've often felt that the staff are really the ears and eyes on the ground of inefficiencies in the university, yep. like seeing a window open at night in Roy Strait Hall in the middle of winter, but also the ways in which things are done. And it would be great if there was an anonymous drop box
yep.
where there would be an ear that would we could all submit things to.
Yep. Mary, do you want to say something about that?
I agree. And in fact, we're working with the deans and vice presidents right now to develop strategies. And one of them is around non-personnel cost savings that would involve a campus involvement strategy just like that, both in terms of a suggestion box, but one not the physical box, but also using the employee assembly for other ways to get get ideas. So more about that probably within a month or so, but absolutely, you all know where there are opportunities for efficiencies, and we need to hear from you and plan to.
And I want to reiterate something in addition to that rank and file process where people can just come in right in their own area and do it anonymously or not. In addition to that, when we compile these ideas, I pledge again to you that I will go with the ideas to the governance groups of the university, to the EA and the GPSA and the SA and the faculty senate or a subset of the faculty senate to talk about these things. And I'm committed to make sure that, especially for big changes that may come up, that we talk about that. But the many, many things that you may be thinking about, you plural, you know, nobody knows it better than the people, as you say, on the ground in those areas. So we're doing that. Mary's already quite a bit down the line in figuring out mechanisms to do that. Other questions?
Oh, gosh, this is scary. I wanted to ask about energy efficiency in particular, and I prepared something because this makes me nervous.
Great.
Increased bicycle usage by staff and students would surely contribute to fuel savings, energy efficiency, and sustainability. Unfortunately, bicycle parking is not part of a unified, comprehensive, campus-wide transportation scheme at Cornell. As I understand it, bicycle parking, the racks and the placements are left to each individual building manager, maybe 300 buildings in all. Does it make sense that this part of transportation planning should be assigned to individuals responsible for the maintenance and upkeep of buildings? I mean, do they place, are bus stops part of their assignment too? I guess I'm requesting from you, Dr. Skorton, if you could help. Can you change this? Could you make bicycle parking and bicycle infrastructure a real part of the transportation and transit planning now? Can you maybe assign someone who would have responsibility for that and for the placement of bicycle racks?
So thanks very much for the question. It's really an important question. And you think you're scared to get up. I got to face all you people who know more about what you're doing.
My knees are shaking.
Really,
here.
Really. Well, I'm shaking all inside too, but this will be okay. I'm glad you got up and did it. Let me give you two answers to that. Perfect. I don't blame you. Just don't leave. Oh, let yourself get settled, and then I can talk right to you. Take your time. Two answers. I'm not prepared to tell you today who I would assign such a thing or even if we would do it. I always want to be straightforward and honest with you. But this kind of issue that you're raising, not the specific issue, obviously we have to think about transportation mitigation for cost reasons, for environmental reasons, for all kinds of reasons. We are thinking about that. I can't give you a chapter and verse on what I'm going to do on this one yet. But the more important thing that you're bringing up is how do we manage the university as an entity? And which issues, not every issue, can you bring everything to the center and have some bureaucrat at a quote-unquote high level making decisions? That's not an efficient way to do things in general, of course, because what do I know about certain things compared to you or someone between us and the organizational charts? The art in this is, can we as a community decide, when I say community, can your elected leaders and the student and faculty elected leaders and the deans and the VPs and the rank and file employees come up with enough good ideas and pick and choose the ideas where it makes sense to leave the management out in the unit, but to have instructions or standards or shared aspirations for where we want to go. And are there other issues where we just have to say, I'm sorry, on these issues, we're just going to do it one way across the campus? The classic thing in universities around the country, public and private, big and small, is to do regulatory compliance in general as one institution. So we have a certain set of laws and rules and regulations that we live in, federal, state, local, and so on. And there can only be one way to answer those things. And in general, universities tend to pull those kind of functions toward the top. And everyday management functions, hiring of people and making decisions on where budgets go, are in general best left to individual units. And I think that it's hard to argue that Cornell has not done a good job with that over almost a century and a half of becoming one of the best universities in the world. But this is the right time to have the courage to face this issue on problems huge and medium-sized and small. And so I can't give you a straight answer, not trying to be deceitful, I just don't know. But the question you're raising is a good exemplar of how we have to look at many different problems. I'm going to write this one down. We will add this one to the list for sure. You can count on that. And when we've had a chance to think about it in a careful way, we'll let the community know what we're doing. But the big idea you're bringing up, which is so critical, is this idea of deciding where, under what circumstances do we manage as hundreds of different units? At what things do we manage as just one big unit? And we have to figure that out together. It's a really important question. And by the way, you did great. You didn't seem scared at all. I think you were just putting it on. So that's good. Thank you. Questions? Yeah, there's one in the back there.
I hear you talk about the state of the university's financial condition and the fact that much of the state budget is dependent on Wall Street. But I believe that many people here at Cornell are very dependent upon national grants and contracts, mm-hmm. what we call soft money.
Right.
And you can't continue spending $10 billion a week in Iraq, have the economy doing what it's doing, and hope that all of our grants and contracts are going to continue.
Yep.
And with the change of administrations on top of that. So what do you see downstream for, I mean, there's a vast amount of stuff that goes on at Cornell that is really important research that hopefully will continue to be funded. But some of us who build toys for astronomers, you know, is that going to be one of the national priorities?
Yeah, thanks, George, for bringing this up. It's very, very important. And by the way, I want to thank you publicly for getting me to learn more about the wonderful things that you guys are doing. It's really staggering, very impressive. Well, let's just take a minute. I'm trying to enlarge these questions. I can talk about a principle. Let me take a minute to remind everybody what are the revenue streams that allow us to run the place like we do. Let's start from the top, tuition. We had last year 33,000 students apply for 3,050 spots in the freshman class. Can you imagine 11 to 1? So we have tuition. It's a very dramatic high tuition over the years. I think it's a terrific value, and we have enormous financial aid here. But tuition is one revenue stream, and I think it's a very stable revenue stream on this campus. A second, in no special order, are the state funds. In general, over the years, I would have to say, in public and in private, that Cornell's been treated very fairly. In recent years, we've gotten a lot of help with capital projects and other things from the state. Right now, the state's contribution is going to have to go down. And I hope we all agree that as citizens of the state, we all want to make sure that our neighbors have appropriate coverage of Medicaid and many other things that have to go on that are basic to life processes, and that the state budget has to be balanced. So that revenue stream is going to fall back a little bit, and maybe more than a little bit. A third revenue stream are the federal grants and contracts. Let me tell you, to follow up George's question, how robust that stream is here. Steve Johnson has taught me that we spend more research money here than any institution in the state of New York, something like $650 million a year, about two-thirds of which, as I recall, is federal research funding of the type that you're talking about. So something approaching $500 million a year, between $400 million and $500 million. We're very, very competitive. Those of you who work in the research enterprise, the faculty who work in the research enterprise, the students who work in the research enterprise, are unbelievably competitive. We're the number two recipient, for example, of National Science Foundation funds in the U.S. after the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign, much, much bigger school than we are. And so if the government has a dip in that we are going to probably have a dip in our income as well. The reason I say probably and not definitely is that not every school is as competitive as Cornell is. And I believe that it's fair to project that funding will be flat. I think that's a fair estimate that I'm making. Down a little bit because the funding itself in inflation-corrected terms is going to be down because of what you mentioned, the war in Iraq and health care, and little matter of that two-thirds of a trillion-dollar bailout business, which to me sounds like real money. And so because of that, the amount that will be available, I think, will be down slightly in inflation-corrected terms. I think Steve would agree with that. Our competitiveness for it, if anything, will probably go up because we have very, very excellent faculty and staff working in the research area. And faculty and staff tend to put more grants in when it's tougher to get grants and maintain a certain level of productivity. So short of a program being totally canceled, like you may remember because of the field you're in, the superconducting supercollider under the state of Texas being canceled like that in Congress one day, there a whole program was wiped out. That's a different story. I don't see that happening. I see the government trying to maintain some sort of parity with inflation or at least nominal parity. But I think that the best we can hope for that, the best we can hope is that it'll remain flat. Philanthropy has been an amazing, amazing source of revenue at this university. We very consistently are in the top 10 institutions of higher education in the U.S. in philanthropy. This last year in cash gifts, we were fourth in the Ivy League and sixth overall. Now, those people, even those who are very wealthy, are having financial reverses as well. And I don't expect the philanthropy to be as robust this coming year as it was last year. Last year, you may know, was the biggest year for philanthropy in the 143-year history of the university. So the alumni and friends are responding to our plea for more philanthropy. But certainly we have to expect that that revenue stream is going to go down. Earnings on the endowment, the financial earnings, are obviously way down, like many of the earnings are way down right now. Those will recover when the market recovers, and the market will recover. And we have to manage the university prudently between now and when it does recover so that we don't lose quality, we don't balance the budget on the backs of our employees, and then we're ready to resume an upward spiral when the market comes back. And so those are the main revenue streams that we are talking about in this university. And they vary according to the different factors that affect them. And what we are doing now, the vice presidents and the deans and the many actually very, very dedicated and hugely talented and well-informed staff employees who work in financial areas throughout the university, is to put our best estimate on what's going to happen to those revenue streams and our best bet as to how to manage the expenditures to match the changes in the revenue stream. And at the risk of making our colleague nervous one more time, I want to say the question that was asked about bicycle and about division of decisions versus coalescence of decisions, that's the question of the hour. How can we most intelligently manage the university to deal with these predictable changes in the revenue stream? So I'm sorry it was a windy answer, but I mean, it's important to talk about the funding from research, but important to talk about all of them. What allows us to get through a period like this more than any university I've ever been at is the diversity of these revenue streams, the large size of the endowment, and the excellence and talent of the employees to figure out by a suggestion box or whatever other mechanism how to do things better. So thanks for the question, George. Questions? Yeah, please, I'm sorry, you had a question before. Sorry if I ignored you.
No, that's fine. I thought I had the question of the hour, though.
Okay.
I think this would save money, but is there any initiative on the campus for purchasing more local foods?
There is. I forgot the statistics right now. I'm not sure if Tommy or others could remind me. I know we've had a big uptick in how we purchased local foods for Cornell Dining. I forgot the percentage that it is, a quarter or a third, something like that, is purchased from a third, purchased from local sources. And I think it's important for many, many reasons for us to try to buy local. Good for the state economy, better for sustainability in terms of use of fossil fuel to deliver projects. And there's really two ways to do that. One way, which is a grassroots community way, is for people to do it by individual decisions. I belong to a CSA, for example, for about 10 years between two places that I've lived. That's one thing. And the second, what you're asking about, is an organizational answer, and that is, are we going to push harder from the top? And it is one of the questions of the hour. Once again, to be honest with you, I can't tell you what role that's going to play. But the rhetoric and the intention and the effort is already there to increase local food. And as you know, a student group has been very active in this. I'm on their listserv and get the mails that they send out. And the question will be where that fits in this whole schedule. Theoretically and functionally right now, we are moving in that direction. What's really behind the question is, I believe, is how fast are we going to move there, and how much of a top-down approach are we going to take to sort of pushing it in that direction. And we're going to have to see what the costs are and what all the different factors are. But for the reasons I talked about and I know you're aware of, it's a very good thing to have in the mix. So thank you.
Thank you.
Yep. Yeah, please. You can just yell from up there. I don't want you to trip or something.
While you and your senior staff and other advisors are working on the big picture, trying to figure out the best way to go forward, what can we do?
Okay. The question was, while the bureaucrats are working on the big picture, if I can put it that way, I'm proud to be a bureaucrat, you know, it beats working for a living. So while we're working on the so-called big problems, what can you do? And I was hoping somebody would ask me this, and I think there's four things that you can do. Number one, be optimistic and have confidence in the 143 years that the university has existed, the enormous strength of the alumni and the employees and the friends, the strength of the student body, the strength of the leadership that's on both sides of me here related to employees. So have confidence and optimism, because maintaining a positive morale, I'm not talking about a spin, but a positive morale, is incredibly important, that we have to have a can-do attitude. And please believe me when I tell you we're in much, much better shape than institutions that don't have these robust revenue streams that I was talking about. So keep that in mind. And it's not a matter of saying stiff upper lip. It's a matter of having optimism and a can-do attitude. That's number one. Number two, when Vice President Opperman and others set up this way, even though it may not be a box, as Mary said, although I'm a dinosaur, a box is fine with me, but whatever way we set up for employees to anonymously or non-anonymously at their choice give suggestions and look very carefully at those suggestions, tell everybody around you to take that seriously. It's not being done for effect. It's not being done so we can say we did it and then go and chop and slash and burn and do whatever we want. It's done because we need your ideas. We need your local expertise, things that only you know about your immediate work environment. So when that call for ideas comes out, take it seriously. Tell your pals to take it seriously, except on January 2, where they're not going to be around. They're just going to have the day off. But otherwise, take it very seriously. A third thing to do is, in issues that you see come out in my monthly or every several week update to the campus, let me know what you think. If there's something that I'm announcing, and I'm announcing it not coming out of my head, but coming out of the collective wisdom, increasingly, of employees and bureaucrats, let us know the things that you believe make sense, the things that you believe do not make sense, and please don't be nervous to write to me from your own email, even though it identifies you, and say, I think you're all wet. I wouldn't give out my personal email if I didn't want you to tell me what you were thinking about. And my colleagues and the senior staff will tell you, I look at every one of those things myself. I take them very seriously. And this is a little different than a suggestion box. This is a way of coming out and saying, I heard what you talked about. Some of those, what you call bigger decisions, are being done. Here's what I think about those bigger decisions, because we need input from you as individual members of the team, as well as from elected leadership and appointed leadership of the university. And the fourth that I would say is very, very important is, remember, as I try to remember every day, that the community at large outside of Cornell needs your help as well. And in times like this, when many of us are, at different levels, I'm not suffering from this financial downturn because I get an enormous wage and many perks from the university, but many people are. I want us to remember the importance of still being generous through United Way and other mechanisms out to the community for people whose need may be even greater than an individual sitting and listening to it. And so I think by being a good neighbor to the community, directly around us and beyond us in the Tri-County area and beyond, is very important because we are a creature of the state of New York as the land-grant university, and it's very important for us to maintain that look outside the campus for the many, many, many people who don't have the advantages in their own workplaces that we have at Cornell. So those are four things I would ask you to think about doing. And as time goes on and you think of a fifth one, write to me. And if it makes sense, and it probably will, I'll get it out there too. Okay? Thanks a lot. Oh, we're out of time. Maybe one more quick question. If it's a quick one, I'll even try to do a quick answer, which I don't even know how to do. Okay, everybody wants to listen to Brian. Thanks a lot for listening. We'll talk to you later. Thank you.
Thank you very much for giving us the opportunity to engage in discussion with you. We're very grateful. We are also very grateful for everything that we as colleagues and employees do on a daily basis to make Cornell the fine institution it is. Your hard work and dedication is appreciated, and let's give each other a round of applause. There is another person who we'd like to thank, who's not up here on the stage with us today, but we know that they're hiding somewhere out there in the crowd. I've been looking for this person. But this is typical for this person, as she constantly stays out of the spotlight while diligently working behind the scenes on behalf of all employees. She has been instrumental in formulating and executing programs and policies that improve employee working conditions and life quality at Cornell. She has also played an active role in assisting the university to be recognized for the numerous employer awards Cornell has received over the 4-5 years. You may have heard of some of these awards. 100 Best Employers for Working Mothers, Exemplary Voluntary Efforts recipient, Top Nonprofit Employer for Women Executives, 50 Best Companies for Prospective Parents, 100 Best Adoption-Friendly Workplaces, Computer World's 100 Best for Information Technology Professionals, and most recently, the number one ranking from AARP's 50 Best Places to Work for People Over 50, making the list for the 4th consecutive year. This year, the Employee Assembly met, and we have unanimously decided to recognize this fellow employee for her hard work and dedication by presenting them with our Employee Assembly Appreciation Award. Coming to Cornell from George Washington University, where she was the director of the Office of Equal Employment Activities, and we are sure glad she did come, her countless hours of devotion has truly made our university a better place to work. Ladies and gentlemen, I call Lynette Chappelle Williams to the stage to receive this year's Employee Assembly Appreciation Award.
You know, this is pretty bad. I was sitting there listening going, huh, I wonder who they're talking about. And it wasn't until they said George Washington University. I have to say, we have been recognized quite a bit, but it's partly because we have such great leadership. We learned that when we had a life quality meeting a couple of weeks ago, and other institutions, our Ivy League schools, were here and listened to all that we were accomplishing, and they even acknowledged we have phenomenal leadership in moving these issues forward. The other is there's a great team of people within human resources, within the various colleges, that understand the importance of these kinds of programs. And so I want to thank everyone in terms of helping us to get where we are.
Thank you, Lynette, for everything you have done for Cornell. Also here to present some gifts is Pat Mahoney, our Employee Assembly Representative from the Geneva Experimental Station. Pat?
she's been married. We don't want to leave her out.
Is my basket the same size as his this year? Same size.
It is. I made sure. This has kind of been a tradition for us in Geneva to present some bountiful gifts that we all grow in Geneva, and we're excited to present this year not just foodstuffs, but we've got some signature wine, and one of the varieties that has been recently created is called Traminette. And Arbor, I believe it's Arbor Mist, does a great job bottling that. So we're very proud to present both of you equally with these wonderful gifts from Geneva.
Yippee! Won't you tell them when to share the wine with staff in my office?
David said he's going to share the wine with staff in his office.
But not during working hours.
But Mary didn't say that.
No, I didn't.
Thank you, Pat. This past summer, the employee assembly had the wonderful opportunity of touring the Geneva station. I learned what a jean gun was. Thought maybe they could shoot me with some different jeans, make me a little taller. Didn't work. And we saw the winery that they had there. A very nice facility. If you ever get a chance to visit it, you should take advantage of it. We'd also like to thank, as we conclude our event, the Office of the President, the Division of Human Resources, the Office of the Assemblies, Cornell Dining, Building Care, the Cornell Grounds Department, and Paw Print for their invaluable support of this event. This concludes today's event. The Energy Fair will resume, and we hope that you can join us. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.